Janeway is pissed and wet.
Pissed and wet. There we go. That's what you like to see.
She presses open a lift and the bridge is goopy. These are my notes for this episode.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 111194.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and I think she'll mutiny if I pull out another Darmok reference. It's Ambassador Danae.
How has the reaction to me not enjoying last week's episode gone? Because I get nervous.
Of course.
I get nervous.
Fandom opinions can be polarizing, and the internet is not always a kind place. I have not been in touch with every single one of our listeners. However, the ones that have commented so far have enjoyed the debate, enjoyed that we got into a bit of a fight, and a few people agree with you. Like a lot of people in live chat. A lot of people in the live chat agreed with you as well, because it's an episode that kind of falls apart, as most things do when you bring it under scrutiny. And possibly, dare I say it, is an overrated episode. That doesn't affect my love for it, but I don't think it's not like you saying I hate Baby Yoda. didn't go over like that. I think that stupid little Yoda thing is ugly.
I just want to say for the record that he is quoting me. I do hate Baby Yoga, right?
Isn't no, you love name? Baby Yoga. That's your favorite thing, but Baby Yoda.
Yeah.
Grogu.
Fuck that little green Grogu, whatever.
What a dick. No, and I encourage you to be as honest and true to yourself, if it means it's not going with the trend.
I have a personal goal in life, which is I really enjoyed finding female voices that were bold enough to just say what they felt, even if it was controversial, and even like curse and talk about just the stuff that I never heard women talk about growing up. And so now that I have been podcasting for over a decade, I keep challenging myself to just be honest about things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is but it's still hard for me because I want to like what other people like, but being honest is a really interesting journey. Because it does mean sometimes you're isolated because you're the person that genuinely isn't having a good time and you do feel a little bit on the outs, but it's just nice to be honest with yourself, which is why I have to say I do like Grogu. Please believe me. I was kidding.
That's the takeaway here. Yeah. Yeah.
He is so cute. He's a psychopath, adorable. Sure, but like, who doesn't like a little psycho?
Right? It kind of broke me when he started eating the eggs of that alien they were helping. And I was like, no, he's murdering babies. How is he still cute?
We eat eggs.
Yeah, but this was different. Like, those eggs were intended to be offspring. The eggs we eat were not. They were never fertilized. They're just
according
period.
To you.
Well, yeah, fair enough.
I guess it depends on where you get your eggs.
No, I don't think that's true. That all of them aren't fertilized, or else they'd be chickens, not eggs.
Let's have a moment.
We just eat unfertilized eggs.
When do eggs get fertilized for chickens?
By the hens. The hens, it's literally the opposite. The roosters do their thing to the ladies, and then that lays an egg. Otherwise, they're just laying an egg. So they will still lay eggs regardless, but they won't turn into chickens unless they're fertilized.
So how do we know, like, we're taking eggs off of a farm. How do we know which ones are the fertilized ones and which ones are just the not?
The ones that haven't interacted with roosters. I mean, the farmer knows. So you're saying this is a trust thing.
Well, like, I have friends and I get the eggs and they have a farm and they have the chickens and the roosters are all together all the time.
That's not normal. Yeah, that's not. And I know this friend. They're not like mass producing eggs either. Like, that's a personal thing.
No. These are my buddies. There's like backyard farmers.
Yeah,
they're
that's not
They're
the
not
norm.
Even really farmers.
Yeah, they're usually separated unless the intent is to breed the eggs.
So you could be eating an egg that was fertilized. You just don't know it.
I think so. But we're talking
this
about
is my
a trust
point.
Thing. Okay,
this
right.
is my point is we don't know. We don't know.
Here on Captain's Farm.
Oh, but you know what? The emails we're going to get explaining this are going to be great.
This is amazing.
Please bring us knowledge.
This is how I was going to wrap this up. I'm 100% sure everything I said was bullshit and I'm going to be corrected. Fact check
me. Maybe it's me.
The problem, the privilege of being a white male is that you present things with confidence and it's like, I am right about this. Correct me. That's in my head what I've heard and what I think happens. I'm happy to be wrong. Please tell me.
We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know.
I fully expect that what happens is they chop the dicks off all the roosters and just let them all mingle together. And that's how it happens.
All right. I'm going to Google where is a rooster's dick. I'm just curious.
I mean, it's probably in the regular place. Well, they probably don't even have one, do they?
You know how I'm so sorry. I swear to God, we're going to get to Star Trek. I just typed in where is a rooster's and then didn't complete it. Here's the top results. Testicles.
Yeah.
Pecker located. Testicles located. Balls, nuts, heart, spur. No.
Pecker. Because that could be innocent. That could mean it's literal pecker. Imagine getting the wrong answer either way.
The rooster's sexual organ is called the papilla, which is located inside the bird, just inside the wall of the cloaca. It looks like a small bump, and it is not at all similar in form or function to a penis, except the extent that semen exits through it. So cutting off its dick is probably not likely.
No, it's not going to. It's cloaca's making an appearance in the CinemaSins universe again. Amazing. I don't know how I segue into that, so let's go and do some emails. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. We have a follow-up to our ongoing replicator discussion debate about whether replicators produce food that is as good as the original. Just as a brief recap, I think that, in theory, replicators should taste as good as the real thing. And the stereotype in Star Trek is that people kind of complain that it doesn't taste as good as home cooking, and this isn't how my mum used to make it. And I argue that the computer's just going to reassemble molecules and can make it taste however you want, as long as you program it correctly. Danae's opinion is, I think she doesn't care. So this is really just an email for me. So this is from Philip McCollum, who I think brings up a great example. In regards to the ongoing discussion regarding replicator food tasting different, think of it as the difference between store-bought and homemade food. A lot of things can change with the taste. Where you get the ingredients from, whether you've had the hen's penis chopped off, he didn't say that. The ingredients used, duck eggs versus chicken eggs, etc. For example, my grandma's egg salad tastes a lot different than store-bought egg salad. Also, with replicated food, it will always have the same taste. Replicated egg salad will always taste the same. Whereas homemade taste can change because there's a human factor.
Mm-hmm.
So I get that. I still think you can program the replicator to be pretty accurate. But do you like that analogy of store-bought versus homemade?
I do. My grandmother, rest in peace, Grandma, her cooking changed as she got older because her taste buds changed.
Yeah.
So she would alter her recipe to increase the flavor, which to anyone who still had taste buds that were active was like,
this
wow,
is salty.
This is so salty. Grandma is just like dumping it in there now. So, you know, I think maybe you could program the replicator to like,
oversalt it.
alter factor 1%. Yeah. And maybe it would add a little dash of extra paprika and salt just for fun.
Goodness. Set it to home cooking where it just randomly fucks up part of the recipe.
Like within an eighth of a teaspoon of this and this and this, and you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And that would be kind of fun. Because no one's deviled eggs taste the same.
No, absolutely not. No, I was making sausage rolls for the first time over Christmas, and I made them three different ways.
Yeah,
they came out three different tastes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
That variation,
so I love this analogy.
Thing.
That's great.
Yeah, I think that works really well. I love that. Thank you, Philip McCollum. Okay, Ambassador, we are coming to the conclusion of our Monster Medley Madness series. We have...
Are we a conclusion?
We are. The reason
is this the last
for that...
One?
No, we have three episodes left.
Oh, okay.
Coming to the end. Now, it's really tricky. Star Trek doesn't actually do a lot of monsters. And I think we've had a pretty good selection other than Ian screwing up a couple of times. This week, we're returning to Voyager with Macrocosm. So the only episode of Voyager that we've done on the show was with Daniel Cardoso, one of the other writers at CinemaSins, and we did Timeless, which was when Voyager was frozen under the ice and Harry Kim and Chakotay are in the future and try to fix the past to prevent the ship from crashing the slipstream stuff. It was like I think 18 months ago. It was a while ago. Yeah. So how do you feel about heading back to Voyager? Are you excited? Mm.
Yeah. This reminds me, for just a brief moment, we talked about, you know, watching the new Discovery when it comes out and how we just drop in without context and if that's a good or bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Still pondering that one.
Similar with what we're doing with this, you know, monster series. We're just going to pop into this Star Trek world and then we're going to pop back out. And there's a lot of context I'm going to be missing. But one of the fun things about shows like this is that technically at any episode, you should have enough for a completely random viewer to come in, experience something that is fun for them on some level, and then either get hooked or be curious or whatever. So I feel really excited because Voyager came, what year did Voyager come out?
Voyager was 94 to 2001, roughly.
Okay. So I remember when TNG kind of ended or something like that.
Yeah, and 94.
And then Voyager was coming out and seeing a lady captain was really, really exciting. But at the same time, I really wasn't as interested in her because she was an authority figure. And Danae
in the 90s was like, fuck that.
Danae was not very interested in authority
figures
at that time.
You would have loved Lower Decks. 1990s Danae would have loved Lower Decks so much.
Oh my God, yeah. But Seven of Nine was someone that I remember like being really attracted to, was like that kind of a female character. So I remember looking for like that kind of a person in the Voyager. I don't know. I was just
totally makes sense.
I like the idea of having somebody that was quirky and unique and maybe like a little bit badass. So the captain was too much of a figure for me, too much of authority figure. And then was there like someone named Kira?
Oh, so Kira is in Deep Space Nine. She's like,
it's not Kira. Who is the little...
Oh, Kes?
Kes.
Yeah.
It's like elf-like creature.
Yeah, the Okompan. Yeah.
I was like, okay, maybe this one. But then she just seemed too nice. And 90s Danae was not nice.
Yeah.
So I very quickly found myself wondering who to relate to. And then I was out. I was out on Voyager.
Because Seven of Nine didn't come in until 4 years, 3 years in. And Kes was there. Like, those first three seasons are shaky in terms of characters.
Yep. Yeah. I pulled out, and then when I went back there was Seven of Nine. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Nice to see you. And then
that's
I was back
basically
in.
Why they brought her in, because the ratings weren't doing very good.
But I did have a very, like, off-and-on relationship. It was just pop in, watch a show, pop out. I didn't really get addicted. So it's going to seem kind of a similar way what we're doing today, just like popping in, popping out. So I have just enough similarity. Oh, the only character I just remember that I really, really liked was the hologram doctor.
Yes.
Loved that guy. Like every time he was on screen, I was like, yeah,
he's incredible. He is very often the cinema sins. Like, he is the nitpicky one that is just, he's very McCoy. Like in Voyager, he's one of my favorites.
He's helpful, but he's snarky and he's a little bit of a mystery. And that was the character that I kind of remember really enjoying.
Totally makes sense.
So yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to visit Voyager because it's going to seem familiar to me, but I haven't invested a lot in it. So I'll have some questions. I might have some memories and some knowledge. Who
see
knows?
What this awakens. Yeah. My prediction solidly is that you're going to love this episode. So without further ado, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and we'll see you guys in 10 forward for full debrief. Welcome to 10 forward, the part of the show where we grab something from... No, I don't think we should grab anything from the replicators this week.
No, there's plasma bags exploding with viral things.
Plasma bags. Nice. I won't correct you just yet. Share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the bioneural gel packs that we just watched. Most important question first. How could you not know that they're called bioneural gel packs? Plasma bags. Plasma bags, my ass. What is your thing of choice from the ship's stores? And this is going to be from Neelix's pantry, is what you're going to have to pick from. And there's really just two things to choose from. I'm sorry. Oh. Just to manage your expectations. There is Leola root stew or cheese.
Why?
It's all he has left.
Well, I guess this is an inside Voyager joke.
Yes, it is.
I'm going to go with the stew but then also a side of crackers and cheese.
The answer was none of them. The answer was neither. You don't want either of those things. Yeah. Why? The Ola Root stew is the ongoing joke that he thinks it's going to be like everyone's going to love this stew and they hate it. And
the Neelix cheese.
Yeah. And the Neelix cheese gets into the systems and starts killing people. So.
Amazing. Okay. Well, that sounds like today's episode anyway. So
give us a synopsis, Ambassador.
Oh, my God. In today's episode, we fight digital demons that are in the shape of hornets merged with squid.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Have you ever wanted to know what a flying hornet squid monster with a protruding, what are those things called? Those are called something.
Tentacles? Oh, the stabby things?
The stabby thing. Okay. What is stabby
like
thing
stinger.
On hornet called? It's like a protrusion, but it's like,
yeah.
What's it called? It's got
it has a word.
It has a word. And it's not a mandible because that's at the front.
Things viruses use to pierce.
What is the stabby
cells.
Thing on a hornet called? Did not yield a result for me. Just
what?
So you know. But what I do know is that there are some images out here of the anatomy, and we're going to call it the tergum. Or the
tergum. It comes with this tergum.
Yeah.
Tergum. I barely knew them.
Now, that is probably wrong. And I can't wait to get the emails about everything that we've already gotten wrong this episode. But we fight him. We shoot him. We basically have found a new life form. And rather than rejoice in that, we annihilate them. And we
understandably on this occasion.
And we share how to annihilate them with anyone who will listen. Oh, and the doctor leaves the holodeck.
Yes, does indeed. Overall thoughts and feelings. Did you like? So I predicted that you would love this episode. I'd like to amend that. I haven't seen this episode in a few years, and it's not as great as I remember it. But what did you think of the episode overall?
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is an episode where the captain turns into Rambo and...
G.I. Janeway.
G.I. Janeway.
It's right
exactly.
There.
Good job. I haven't
been sat on that for the entire week, I promise.
Yeah, you sure have.
I have. I absolutely have.
And I think that would be really fun to watch. Like, if this is your show, I think it'd be fun to watch your captain.
It's very rare that you see Janeway do this. It's like when we see Picard recapture the ship in Starship Mine. It's seeing the like intelligent captain go Rambo is always kind of fun.
Well, yeah. And she goes into a tank top. Like, we lose all formality.
Yep.
In lieu of survival, which is understandable.
No diplomacy.
Yeah. It's definitely an on the edge of your seat style episode where I think if I were involved in the creation of this and I was filming it, it would be really fun, right?
Yeah.
Like the camera work in this is really interesting because you've got sort of like the drone-esque flying through the room thing, but there's no drone cameras now in this time period of our world.
No?
It's a man or a woman behind the camera making it look zoomy and like and they do a clever thing of building a lot of tension. And but this episode is largely like a crawling through Jeffrey's tube, sneaking around, accessing panels, you know, trying to figure out the virus. And then at the time when we figure out what's going on, we have a flashback that kind of gives us more story and how are they going to save the day sort of a vibe. And how they save the day is they blow up a pretend playground room. Totally
holodeck.
Forget what they're called. That's what they're called.
Holodeck. They have a pretend playground room. That's exactly what it is. I mean, I challenge you to describe it more succinctly.
Why can't I think of holodeck?
It's amazing. It's so great, the words that you forget. What I remember about this episode is G.I. Janeway. And just her getting locked and loaded, collecting her weapons, getting suited up and kicking butt.
Yeah.
That's all I could I remember the viruses, obviously. So I remember that being awesome and then just expanded that to the rest of the episode. But the rest of the episode's kind of meh.
Yeah, it's a little bit slow paced. Like they really rely heavily on it being very interesting to crawl around and sneak around Janeway style. Which is fine, but you know, by the last quarter of the episode, when we're really trying to learn more about what's going on, you know that they're on a barrel race towards the final few minutes of the episode. So,
my goodness,
there's more time spent sneaking than there is backstory, which I think it's paced okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It's not terrible.
No,
I feel it a little bit when they're like describing, because they do this weird time thing where they dump you in the middle of the mystery and then the doctor does a load of flashback exposition to get us up to date. And then I'll kind of be in that bit of the episode and then come back to the present time and be like, oh shit, yeah, there's exciting stuff that's happening. So it does a weird time thing.
Yeah. So like, I guess my impression right away is this is okay. You know, it's okay.
Yeah, it's fine.
We have a mystery on our hands. We have a virus that's adapting, and that's an interesting thought. We have a virus that's kind of like they're attacking it and it's taking out the crew, and that's an interesting thought. And it's like, okay, this is interesting to watch. But like, okay, so, but my curiosity here is you and others in the chat are saying, like, I do remember this being way more interesting, and then it's not. So what changed for
it's
you?
So interesting, isn't it? So I think I've got two ways of thinking about it. Younger me would have definitely liked this because it's action heavy. So for the most part, so there's
and
like phasers being fun. I'm thinking younger than my awakening. It was like action. You get to see phasers. There's a mystery. They've got the tricord scanning everything. You've got like the doctor doing fun stuff. You've got this alien flying around the ship. Like there's not a lot of like the deep metaphorical thinking and talking and profound stuff. This is just like, eat your popcorn and watch an adventurous episode of Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think, because I haven't seen it in years and years and years, I think my old brain is like, oh, I need something a bit more. I can get this from everything. I don't necessarily need it from my Star Trek. And the other half of the episode is a bit dry. Like, I think the pacing is a little bit off. So I think I'm just remembering the really cool stuff and Janeway kicking ass. But that is kind of compensating for the rest of the episode, which is a little bit bland. And we've just kind of seen this type of sneak around the ship, get attacked by alien creature
something.
Yeah, so the tension is a little bit samey, the tension that is in the episode.
Yeah,
I think it may just be that it hasn't aged very well on me.
I think that the tension is samey, and how could they have changed that? Maybe at the time this was perfect, like a perfect tension building episode. Now with, like you said, so many other things we could watch, it would be really interesting to pair Janeway's return and Janeway and Neelix's return with what happened days previous, where they're trying to figure it out while we're figuring out weird things while they're figuring out weird things.
Oh, that would be really good. Yeah, do it like Chris Nolan would do it.
Oh,
that
interesting.
That would be
fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, because I feel like then when Neelix's neck wound leaks something or whatever. Did Neelix's neck wound leak something? Or was that the flashback?
No, that was in the flashback. It was B'Elanna's neck leaked something.
No,
and the alien
I saw
on
it
the
before
planet.
The B'Elanna, though.
Oh, the alien on the planet.
Maybe it was the miners.
Yeah, the miner on the planet.
Yeah. Maybe like at the same time we're sort of seeing the neck wound, live in person, realizing how bad it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think overall something about it just deflates the tension enough that you turn into trying to figure out a mystery into, I'm going to watch whatever happens.
Yeah.
I think I did like it though.
Yeah, I still have a good time. I think I'd rather watch Genesis. So Genesis is the one, basically the same thing.
Like, is that the one where they devolve?
Yep. Captain and somebody else arrives back at the ship. A virus has taken hold of the ship. But instead you're being chased by your crew and working out, like, I think the mystery for me is more interesting. You get a more like a greater variety of devolutions. And I just think like the tension in there is sold a bit more. I'm not getting the tension here because there's no, like, I know nobody's gonna die. Like, I know there's not a lot of, like, they're all just knocked out in 10 forward, and I know that the aliens are
they
a bit
tummy
of a threat
or something.
I never get this feeling that the crew is at risk, which might sound stupid, but I think it's because the doctor immediately has a cure. So there's no ticking clock of trying to find a cure like there is in Genesis. It is Genesis. But in this one, we know the doctor has the cure. It's just about disseminating it.
But there was a mention, I think, of the creatures gathering them together somehow. I couldn't. There is an element of this episode that if you're just watching it, there's some parts of like the monster. What is the monster doing? What is this virus doing that was confusing? But there's also some really interesting parts of it. There's a virus that has latched onto a host and has consumed their growth hormone, is I think what they're doing.
Basically,
and then begins
yeah.
to grow exponentially, and it's growing fast enough that it's alarming, but not so fast that it eventually overtakes the ship. It basically does overtake the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, like, what are they going to evolve into? But then this, so at the same time, there's this episode is really interesting and weird because it starts
It's terrifying,
off,
the idea.
It is. It starts off with like a very dropped into the end of a conversation between the captain and this alien tac-tac creature. And I thought I had missed like 10 minutes or something. And so I...
Right. It just kind of dumps you in there.
Yeah. And then it's the captain has done something offensive and you've got Neelix emoting and you've got this alien doing like face yoga. There's just these there's hand gestures, there's movements, there's a lot of lack of eye contact.
When this episode started, I was like, oh shit, I've picked another alien species that speaks weird.
And so...
he's gonna hate this!
I was very confused, but then we just move on, which is fine. And the captain's thanking Neelix for being able to communicate, and calls him an ambassador, and they're returning to the ship that has been taken over by this virus. But then at the end of the episode, then Nicky Knack people, knack-knacks?
Tank-tacks?
Tank-tacks.
They're called tank-tacks.
The tack-tacks attack them.
Yes. Under attack by the tank-tacks.
Yeah. Because they figured out that the virus has come around, and I think that they also destroyed the miners.
Yeah, so they vaporized the miners.
Basically, they're exterminators at this point.
Yeah, it's like the Klingons going after the Tribbles, just like with prejudice, just destroying them.
So they know about this virus, and this is how they're going to handle it. They take it upon themselves to eliminate and. Matt, this is where it was just it's like walking through a museum or something and just taking it in and not really having long, deep conversations. Like,
mm-hmm.
The beginning of the episode indicates that Captain Janeway offended them. But then in the moment when Captain Janeway is attempting to save her crew, she doesn't offend them anymore. She's able to communicate perfectly.
Yeah, well, no, I think they just kind of ignore it. I don't know.
But why didn't they ignore it the first time then?
Yeah, it's weird. Maybe they're used to it with new species, but this was a diplomatic mission where they were deliberately... like, what always gets me in Star Trek is that the humans generally, or the Federation, whatever, conform to another alien's traditions. But the aliens don't meet them halfway and like give them any grace. But I guess Janeway does address that as well.
But so that was like, it would have been interesting to me if part of this episode would have been her offending them even further because
Neelix
wasn't
there.
And that's
why they attack.
By the way, we never see Neelix again.
No, is he okay?
Where do the aliens drag them?
I guess the Doctor says...
Is he a host?
The Doctor says they gather... their victims
them.
Together. So Neelix has been gathered somewhere. We just don't know where. It's super, super loose. They really wanted to do Rambo Janeway, and I think that's as far as the logic went.
Maybe. It did seem a bit like this part's been thought out a lot. We're going to have her climbing up, climbing down, crawling forward this way, crawling forward that way.
Carrying a phaser rifle.
Squatting and squinting.
Yeah.
Opening panels.
Mm-hmm.
Opening trunks. Like, we knew we have a lot of Janeway doing stuff.
Yeah,
but then, like, when it comes to the relationship with the tac-tacs and the bug spray that's needed to kill everything, it's a little quick. It goes by fast. But
yeah, it does. I do love the concept, though. And I kind of wish they'd done more with it, of a virus that grows big enough to enter the three-dimensional world, for lack of a better term, the macroscopic world. And just what that means, like, I think there could have been more to explore with what happens when a virus breaks through and how just disastrous that would be. It's almost like we didn't go far enough with it in pairing this with a solo Janeway adventure.
Yeah, it is interesting to think about. I did not believe for one second that they eradicated the virus.
I was So this has an extremely jarring ending where, yeah, for me anyway, I think it is. Like, you've got Janeway and Chakotay have their little, oh, I'm not going to go to the holodeck. I've had enough exercise. Ha ha ha. Carry on painting while listening to elevator music. External shot of Voyager.
What was that?
Jarring. Just end it then. And I was desperate for them to just have a little zzz, zzz. Like, not even seeing it. Just as you have the external shot of Voyager. That would have been great. Just never address it again. Doesn't matter.
How would they eradicate it that quickly? Because they didn't aerosol the entire space, which I thought they were going to do.
They never specify this, but it seems like, no, because she uses the bomb. So I think they do just get to the environmental systems and just emit the gas everywhere, even though the doctor has to physically touch it. I don't understand it the first time. Yeah.
It somehow purifies the entire ship.
I don't think they really thought about that too much.
No, and that's part of, I think, where this is a shaky episode for me, is the fun of this episode really is watching your captain crawl around and save the day somehow. And I feel like this episode is for the Doctor. It's for the fans who are excited to see the Doctor's continued adventures. Mm-hmm. And in this case, the delightful scenes that include him being overjoyed to leave the ship, not only leave the ship, but like go on his first away mission and keep his comm lines open and just tell everything he sees as he goes.
You gave like a giggle at that. It's so fun.
His childlike joy when he finds this virus. And it's just, it would be like watching a child play with a snake going, yeah, look at this. It's so cool.
God, like, no, put it down. No, you can't bring that home. You can't beam up with it.
So I think that that's the other part this episode is supposed to do, because of the characters that we see doing deep, like overarching show work, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. This is a show Janeway be a strong leader and save the day, and a show that the Doctor can do more than just stay in this one room.
I think Voyager might just be exclusively for the Doctor's character arc. I think he has the best arc of any character we see. The most like complete one, the most nuanced one. The show really was just somehow dedicated to Robert Picardo. I love that so much. And then Seven, in like the later series, I think she probably has probably the most character growth, screen time-ness.
Yeah. There's a lot that happens. So we find out at the end that essentially the Doctor was... So while Janeway and Neelix were talking to Tac-Tax, Voyager went to a mining colony, which should definitely be one of our standard cliche sins, because that comes up more than I ever thought it would.
Mining colonies? Always, yes.
So much.
Constantly. There's always some shit that goes down.
I mean, understandable. We need to mine things, I suppose. So,
And this stuff always lines up with an away mission. Like, there's always two things going on at once. It's like, oh, just so happens to be a distress signal at the same time as the captain being away.
And despite protocol and despite doing everything, the Doctor beams back up with this virus. But something I really love about Voyager that I feel like I'm missing a little bit, maybe even in TNG, and having watched the TNG, is the alien prosthetic stuff going on. I was overjoyed to see this really cool, like, reptilian sort of character.
Yeah. What blows my mind is that it's in the episode for 5 minutes. Like, the work that went into creating both the miners and the Tac-Tac, like, that is some, like, these are the aliens you could have got away with just doing a nose bridge or, like, some funny ears. But they go full prosthetic on both of them because they're in the Delta Quadrant. It's so good.
Like,
yeah, it's incredible work.
Have this sort of, like, arcing...
So impractical.
...sort of thing from the chin, and it sort of arcs up to their forehead. And so their profile looks like they have, I don't know, like a Saturn ring through the forward part of their head. And that's really cool. Like, what does it do? How does it evolve that way? Yeah. Does it help them to hear sound differently? Or like, what is that like?
Does it just protect their teeth? Is it like to headbutt people?
That's the kind of stuff that is fascinating to me. Yeah. So, and I think Neelix's head prosthetics are so beautiful. he's got this cool like spire of hair, this sort of spiky, like, but then it's this nice ombre look with like the little flex.
I really
on it.
Like the Talaxian design. People have
Talaxian
differing opinions on Neelix, but I think the Talaxian design is very, very cool.
Yeah. So I really liked seeing them. And it's interesting that this virus, despite differences of races, seems to have a very interesting and familiar, like they're wheezing and coughing and sort of rendered.
Everyone gets a bit of COVID.
Oh,
it's kind of similar symptoms.
I mean, I guess.
Oh, boy.
I don't quite understand. This is part of it, too, is I understand what's being told to me, but then what I'm watching appears to be different. Like, we have this creature that jabs you or spews goop onto you, and then does it come back to eat you later to get even bigger? I don't understand
because
that part.
There's the thing that the virus is doing, the thing that the little fly is doing, and then the thing that the macrovirus is doing. Like, I guess a virus is usually just there to reproduce itself, and I think it has to, I could be getting this completely wrong, but I think it has to use a cell's machinery to do that reproducing. Like, it can't do it on its own necessarily. So you've got the little bug that's doing the infection and then doing the biting to create more of the bugs. But I don't know what the advantage is to making yourself big. I guess it's just to
accidental?
Be able to collect people.
I guess. Like, because
like the advantage
of little
like
arms.
Yeah.
Because it wrapped around Janeway. She went stab on it for a split sec.
Because like making yourself that big means you have to fuel yourself. So you need food, and it's a pain in the ass to gather enough resources to be that size. So I don't know what the advantage is of being that big when you can just self-propagate by infecting people and being tiny.
Yeah. It was really, it required a lot to the imagination, but then it also explains a lot too. I was kind of impressed with how much was going on. And I like that we had a replicator situation as well, where the replicator was impacted.
Mm.
And then we're touching bags, which of course is a sin, but
yeah, everything gets touched.
Yeah.
All of the bad stuff done.
I didn't quite understand, how it all worked. Now that we're talking about it, I think I get it. Like, they snot on you and then that gets into your system and slows you down, and then they collect you for later.
Exactly. Yeah.
Is what we think.
Yeah. So that they can, but I don't know what the big ones do once they've used the host. Is it just using them as a breeding sack? Why not eat them as well?
Know. Like, maybe
why
it has
not
to
eat
come
the
back.
Humans?
I don't know.
The answer is that most of Voyager's crew would be dead. If there was a next step, most of them would be dead.
Yeah.
And they didn't like killing people off on Voyager in general.
Yep. And we have like the convenience of the doctor's antigen works on the first go round in Janeway kind of a thing. But at the same time, it was fun. We got to see a lot of the ship. We got to have a nice joke from the doctor about how that scene where he's explaining, he's saying, "I've been studying the ship. I think I know how to get around, but can you remind me?" And she's like giving all these detailed instructions. And then he picks back up, "Oh, yeah, okay, I know where I am." Who built this thing? Who designed this thing anyway? Like, that was really funny to me.
While they're walking around the Jefferies tubes.
Yeah.
Jefferies is the man that, I think it's Matt Jefferies, designed like a lot of the inside of the ship. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of an interesting thing. Like, I liked that too. But we got to see, Janeway go to all these different areas, and we even had a pool party. I mean,
yeah, we did. Look at that. So what did you think of the CGI? So unlike TNG, Voyager was in a place where CGI was being improved, becoming more affordable. How did the CGI monster hold up for you with 2024 eyes?
Well, I think that we need to remember that CGI is expensive.
Yes, it is. Doing it well.
To make it look super, super great, it requires a massive budget. I didn't mind it too much. Would I prefer this, or would I prefer TOS, running around on a wheelie cart with a carpet over the top of you, from TOS?
Halter. Give me a halter.
Yeah. I think you just have to sort of like go, that is clearly a person laying down with a carpet on them.
Just be okay with it. Yeah.
And look at the Gorn. Would you prefer, like, you use what you have.
Of course, yeah.
So if I'm like, Gorn looked great for what it was, then I'm going to look at the CGI and go, it looks great for what it was. Did you ever see the Landoliers?
No,
Langoliers?
I didn't.
The Langoliers, nope. Maybe Langoliers. It's called.
Laudlin.
I think it's a Stephen King kind of concept. I saw it on TV when I was too little, and it is essentially like this horror movie, and it's this massive, like, spherical mouth teeth thing that just eats everything, kind of like the Nothing from the Neverending Story. And like, it's just this really uncomfortable situation. I think the idea, if I remember correctly, is it doesn't matter. The Langoliers look fucking awful. We talk about bad CGI. That's what I think of. That's when I think reference. About bad CGI. This one had texture.
Yeah.
It had movement. I didn't understand the buzzing sound, but it looked like a hornet's nest. Like, I didn't know
makes
how
sense
that
when they
makes
have wings.
A buzzing sound.
Yeah, I don't know how it's flying. I know the little ones have wings, apparently, but I don't know how the big one is flying around. It's just kind of propelling itself. But for me, like, I think the CGI holds up okay until they try and interact with it. So whenever you have, like, the Doctor holding thin air, Janeway holding onto it, when it interacts with a human, that's when it falls apart. If they'd have found clever way to avoid that, I think it holds up a lot better.
I don't think I agree with you, because they probably acted that, and then you have these people that are trying to put in this tentacle creature afterwards and post quickly with very little and limited resources. I mean, they probably had something that they were holding in their hands, and then they had some of it that was CGI.
I'm not saying they did like a bad job. I just mean it's really obvious. Like, that's where it's most jarring for me. That's when I notice, it takes me out of the show. Like, I'm not saying they had an option to do better, but it's really distracting. But it's less distracting when it's just flying around on its own.
I don't agree. But that's just because I guess it's in a different category of my brain, because we're coming from a world of Avatar, where we're watching made-up blue alien creatures that look like more beautiful than, more well-rendered than an actual human being on a screen. Mm-hmm. Like,
correct.
We have incredible CGI options now, if you have the money for it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it takes me out at all. They're just doing what they would always do in a sci-fi environment.
Yeah, yeah. Visually for me, I can't ignore it. And I remember that when I was younger. I remember like, okay, that doesn't look real. So I guess, and I just have this, I'm not judging them for it. I'm just saying it takes me out of the episode. Like, it's ambitious. It's very ambitious.
So it takes you out of the episode that's occurring in a fictional world in space and puts you where?
Yeah, absolutely.
It all puts you just back in your bed, back in your room?
Yeah. Okay. It just reminds me that I'm watching a TV show and that these guys aren't actually looking at an alien. But they are on Voyager. They are on a ship. I wouldn't say I'm sad. It's just something that It takes me out of the episode, takes me out of the adventure. Okay.
So you're back at the TV.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Exactly.
But aren't you glad it's not real? Like, for a split sec, aren't you like, oh, phew.
Oh, phew, it's not real. No, that's the same thing as like Mission Impossible or like some other, there's plenty of stuff in the world that should scare me that I'm glad I don't know about actually.
No, I understand what you're saying. I guess. For me, though, I'm still right in there. What breaks immersion for me is when it gets so boring that I'm ready to check my phone.
Yeah,
that's when it gets when it gets different for me.
Well, that's what I'm like, it's just watching life. That's fine. That's like, brings it closer to home.
When they're fighting it and it wraps itself around, I wasn't distracted. I'm just like, well, shit, they should die. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking everyone should already be dead.
Yeah.
You've created a monster that should win, technically.
It really should. And like, haven't seeing the crew already like knocked out and just unconscious.
Yeah, like completely immobile.
He's like, the risk to Janeway, for me, I'm not feeling, because I'm like, well, this has happened to all of the crew and they're fine. They just need the cure. So I'm like, this isn't going to kill Janeway necessarily. It's just going to hoard her somewhere.
I think because Janeway gets to the doctor quickly, I can believe it. Because she does get there for her surgery, by the way.
minor surgery, just has a different meaning in the 2300s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, minor surgery.
And then he pretty much explains what's going on, thankfully. And then we get to see like the fullness of what's going on. And then he gives her the cure. So I think that's the only reason she's not incapacitated quickly. But I don't know. I mean,
fight at the very end outside the holodeck when they're like, she's going hand to hand with the big one. I'm just like, okay, she'll get knocked out. Like, yeah. I know that it isn't going to kill her, because if it does kill her, that means it should have killed everybody by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tension's a weird one in this one.
Yeah. It was definitely uncomfortable. Anytime that you see that stabby thing, which it's got to be called something like a probus.
Probituate? Probarnum. Protronum. Patronum. Patronum. Expecto!
God, I really...
Patronum!
It's Patronus, and...
Yeah, but no, but the thing is a Patronus, but the Patronum is the
Patronum.
Spell.
Patronum, okay, okay. Thank you.
Paulie has been screaming at us, it's a stylet.
And it's like, it's a stylet?
It's stylet.
Probiscus!
Yeah. Probiscus, is that what you were going for?
Probiscus?
I thought that was a plant.
Is that it? That sounds right.
This is amazing.
I'm sorry.
This is the best.
That's
one day I'll have a
isn't
clean
that the
edit.
Nose? Ah, aha. Okay, the proboscis is an elongated feeding tube attached to the head of an animal. That's not it.
It's not a feeding tube.
It's not a feeding tube.
I think it's an infecting tube.
It's more of a stabby tube. It's like a, yeah.
Probiscus stabber.
But I think proboscis, I think that's what I was originally had in my brain was that word. So now we can try to eliminate that.
Good.
Yeah, now we can try to call it a stylet.
Stylet.
Which sounds so cool. Gonna kill with a stylet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway.
This giant protrusion just like jutting out of its middle part and just like stabbing the ground while Janeway is fighting it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very CGI and it looks fake as shit. But at the same time, I wasn't thinking that. I was just like, oh God.
Oh my gosh. Don't let it be real.
And then it kind of has this side shot where it's looking up at Janeway and she keeps shifting her head out of the way as it's jabbing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's an element of thinking about how an episode like this is put together, thinking about what you're going to try to do in post through CGI and getting those shots. That's pretty cool. And so I was enjoying what they were putting together for me. It does kind of remind me a bit of what's the bad guy that's in Strange New World?
Oh, I love this game. This is the best.
I just said their name.
Mm-hmm, you did.
Gorn.
Okay. Yeah.
This reminds me of the Gorn episode of Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. With the one that rips off Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very similar vibe. Yeah. Totally similar vibe. Totally similar.
Kind of being hunted and you're crawling around. And
being used as a breeding sack, essentially. Yeah.
The ship is shutting down.
Version. Yeah.
And also we get to see the ship, which, can we talk about that?
Yeah, let's do it. What do you think of Voyager?
I love Voyager.
Yeah, I love
it's
Voyager
real
too.
It's real kind of like modern because it's gray.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's gray and dimly lit. It's one of the most accessible ships. Like, I wouldn't introduce Voyager as somebody's first Star Trek. But in terms of I don't look at it and think, man, this is so 90s. I just look at it and think, I could watch this today if we did episodic television like this, which I know we don't. But I think it's aged really, really well.
I liked it. There was a moment when they first get on. So Neelix and Janeway first get back to the ship and they go over to this wall and she pops a button and all of a sudden the panel, like the whole screen kind of comes to life and it's very TNG in its styling, but updated a little bit.
Yeah.
And she tells us a lot of information.
Smooth. Yeah,
I remember thinking like, wow, that's a lot of information she's getting, but there was a ton of information on the screen, so and they just know what they're talking about because they're starship people. But so it had that familiarity of TNG, but everything seemed to be more Strange New Worlds.
Yes.
Grays and
shiny
black, red accents. And I remember watching Strange New Worlds feeling like it was a upgrade in a way from the beige carpets and such.
Yeah, so TNG was, with the design prompt, was like, we want this to be the most luxurious and comfortable way to possibly travel through space. So whereas TOS was more like kind of military and bare bones, by this point, your starships are for families and they're comfortable. And in the 80s, that was beige and carpet.
Yeah. Got to make you feel comfortable. We're going to we're gonna bring on some carpet, lots of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to see like the warp core, which I love was that updated.
Warp core so
it's
much.
Really slim.
Yeah.
You know?
And I love the fluid plasma, just like kind of swirling. I've always loved Voyager's warp core. It's
and
so
then
fun.
They're walking when she's walking around the upper kind of area, part of it is carpeted and then part of it is glass.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks kind of, you know, unique in that way. So yeah, I thought that the design of the ship was really interesting. And we got to use a force field, many of them actually, containment fields. But like that doctor's like, computer, set up a force field.
It took so long to say it. And like that thing should have escaped. So many words had to be said.
Oh my God. That was intense. That moment, I was like, get it, go, go.
Go, 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 go.
Yeah.
While we're talking about the tech and stuff, this has my favorite phaser. The Dolphin phaser is, you've got like the like kind of the phaser from TNG, which is more straight. But Voyager has like this curved handle and it's a really sleek phaser that kind of fits more into like the contour of your palm.
Okay.
And I just, the Dolphin phaser is my absolute favorite Star Trek phaser. It's
and that's why you have
so
one.
So elegant. I don't have one. I made one out of clay for my dad when I was much younger, but I do not actually have one. It's so, so pretty. I love it.
Speaking of things you've made out of clay.
Yeah, honestly, like the phaser held up much better than the Durpa Prize did. My goodness.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting. We got to see like Rambo gear. Do you remember when we were watching Picard and they went over to the wall and they got those guns out?
Yeah.
This was that moment.
Yeah.
She's got a fucking rifle.
Yeah, like in engineering, there's like a tactical pack available.
Apparently.
And she gets like the cool black backpack, which I really want, loads up with a knife and some grenades. And it's just suit up, let's go.
Yeah. This is an interesting looking ship. It's interesting looking stuff.
Yeah.
I had a really good time with it when we were in the sick bay. So we're seeing their telescope stuff. They're not microscope, not telescope, the microscope stuff.
Literally the opposite. Yeah.
So we had a whole tour.
Yeah.
We went a lot of places. So even though it was slower pacing for crawling around, we still got to see a lot of the ship.
That's the fun thing about these types of episodes. When you're crawling through tubes and being chased around the ship, you get to see a lot more.
And I also like whenever we started the episode and you saw the ship pop up, you're like, oh, it's so pretty.
I'm such a sucker for this. Like, just give me an external shot of the ship and I'm just like, it's so beautiful.
You were very happy to see the ship again.
Look at this ship.
Oh, you've got it.
Look at it. Bum, 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 bum. What I love about it is that it's such a departure from the like the Enterprise. So up until this point, we'd seen like a few different versions of the Enterprise. You get the Reliant. There's a few different versions of ships, but they tend to look like the Excelsior or the Enterprise or the Reliant in general. It's one of those three ships. This is so different. Like there's no neck. It's just a connected saucer section, which isn't a saucer. Tiny little adorable, tiny, teeny, tiny nacelles.
And I
just think it's such a, like, this ship is tiny compared to the Enterprise, but it's meant for maneuverability and just being fast and being a bit more tactical, even though it's technically a science vessel. Voyager is one of my favorite ships.
I know, the podcast listener, you can't see what's going on, but it is exactly as you imagine.
Hey, that description was perfect.
Ian has been holding up the model of the Voyager, geeking out for the last several minutes, and
someone just mentioned, do the nacelles on the model move? And no, they don't. It's so dumb. It's the nacelles at the end of the opening credits, they shift upwards to go to warp, and there's no need. Why is like, why
you don't
are
know
you
that?
Moving them, putting it into
you don't
four-wheel
know that?
Drive? What's going on?
Maybe
why would
it
they
needs
need
it
to move.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty
I love
great
that ship. I love it.
It was fun to see, and I haven't seen it in a long time, so that was nice. Mm-hmm.
So did you notice, you wouldn't have noticed this, I don't think, did you notice a bit of Tom and B'Elanna barbing? So Tom was the replacement cook, and B'Elanna was the half Klingon, and they're like arguing with each other and getting snippy about the food and stuff. Did you notice the sexual tension between them?
More like sexist, nope. But
me neither. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. What do you mean, nope, me neither?
Well, because
what am I missing? I'm obviously missing something because I haven't watched it in a long time.
They end up getting together in the next season and they kind of lay some of the foundations.
I thought you were going to say scene and I'm like, I missed that.
No, totally missed that. Yeah, they're just
in their comatose state, they roll into each other with their mouths touching.
Rubbing on each other. No, in the next season they get together and they kind of lay some foundations in this season. So it's interesting to watch episodes where they interact because I'm like, was this the start? Like, was this it? But it's this typical, like, they hate each other and then that hate turns into passion and love. And
that's right. Hey,
not
listen.
One of my favorite things about Voyager.
Forced proximity will do many, many things to you.
No, actually, you know? Correct.
They have very limited. Yeah.
There's 150 of them. Uh-huh. Yeah.
The chances of them hooking up with many are pretty high, you know?
Yeah, monogamy should be the way on a generational ship. You got to spread some seed. Mm-hmm. That was gross. Anyway, spread some space seed.
That actually starts because of this episode. They were like, you know what we do? We need to just expand. So. Yeah. I am going to infect you, and then you're going to have multiple.
I've seen you covered in mucus. I would like to do that again to you.
Yes, yes. This time with no plasma bag, which is not called a plasma bag at all. It's called
the bioneural gel packs, which cause shenanigans because it's like this. It uses the human circulatory system as inspiration, and it's meant to be way more efficient than EPS conduits. But they cause shenanigans because they're biological. There we
Interesting.
Go.
There you go.
So I had one more thing that I really loved in this episode, and it's this change of perspective camera work thing that they do where you have the creature that's like coming up on Janeway as she's on the bridge and doing some bloop, 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 and you're like, oh, how does she not hear the thing coming? Amazing change of perspective when it's suddenly a tiny little fly. I think that's really, really well done. I love that. So much.
I enjoyed that too because I was like, how is she not hearing this thing, you know, because we assume it's large, having only seen the larger, you know, shadows passing in the hallway, and obviously it was big enough to drag Neelix away, so
yeah
that was really, really clever.
I love that. It was a really, really nice taking advantage of the concept to do something fun. I like that.
No, I think it was fun. I think there was a lot, maybe too much in this, in a way too much in the second half. With like the doctor and the captain, you know, saving the day and crawling through, and the doctor gets stuck in a shuttle. He has to sequester him, and we don't see any of how that happened. Yeah.
No, immediately just taken out of action.
And that happened so fast. It's like, hey, I was going to do this, but then I can't. So I'm stuck in the shuttle.
Yes, I can. Yeah.
And I kept thinking, well, then why not just open the fucking doors and just zap all these guys out? You know, I kept thinking of ways that they were going to solve the problem, and then watching them solve it a different way and then still being confused by how they solved it. So, yeah, I think overall I liked it, but it was a little bit confused about it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot. I mean, this is kind of getting into the sins, but the main power cliche going down is like, because that takes out transporters, it takes out environmental controls, you have to do things manually. But I'm just like, there should be more ways to stop that from happening. This is a virus. Yeah. It's not intelligent. It didn't take anything out. I just think there should be like some autopilot shit that happens to prevent the entire ship being shut down by a virus. But there we go. Before we move into the sins, Ambassador, what is your pips out of 4 for this episode?
I think I'll give it 3.
I was going to give it 3, but I think for me, it has to be a 2. Like, but it's a really positive 2. It's a 2 that I really like. It's not a 2 that I dislike. It's a 2 that I like, but I'm just surprised it hasn't aged as well on me. So I think I need to give it a 2.
Maybe I'll come down and I'll do 2.5 pips.
Yeah. Let's settle on 2.5.
There's no half of pips, but we're going to say. It's a 2 pip that's right in that season of going for a promotion.
It is. It's Harry Kim. Quite, it never quite gets not, there.
Oh, no.
Poor Harry. Still, you know, no confirmed promotion.
You know what we didn't do?
What's that?
Predictions.
No, I kind of deliberately didn't do predictions because there's so little to base it on. Like, you've got the one word, and that's frustrated you in the past, and I don't like frustrating you. I think we had a tumultuous, frustrating episode last week, so I thought... Predictions
well, no, I'm
aren't
upset
as fun
that you didn't
time.
Do it.
I can't win. That's the moral of the story.
I have no idea how I would have done anything on this one, though. I have no idea. It would have been so silly. But let's just say I got it, so I'm getting points this episode. Yay!
Well, I made a prediction that you would love this episode, and I don't think that prediction came true. Like,
I loved it.
Yeah, no. I immediately undid my own prediction because I was like, you, I don't love this, so I don't know. Yeah, I think I got that wrong.
There you go.
But there we go. Well, with that, red alert, everyone. Battle stations to engineering.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show. Everyone, did I see that coming? This is the part of the show where we remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. I did that without reading my prompt. It's only taken two and a half years. 2.5 years, people. You go first, Ambassador. I think I have like 20 sins.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I would write a 20-minute TV sins episode on this episode. It's wild.
Mm. I think my first sin is that the initial conversation that they're having with the Tac-Tacs may be more interesting than anything else that happens for me this episode.
No, then wait, no. You're saying you want an episode that's mm-hmm. dedicated to an interesting mm-hmm. way of communicating with an alien mm-hmm. species.
Yes, and here's
why. If only Star Trek would do that. If only Star Trek would give us an episode where we could do that.
Yes, and here's why.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
This is going to be an episode of Lower Decks. And basically, this entire thing is like they're communicating through yoga, or they're like, it's going to be people who can't stretch that far, you know, just the whole. No, it would be a terrible episode. I'm just joking. That wasn't.
I think it would be great. I think it's amazing.
But it was so funny. Like, I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? Because it just drops you into it. So there's got to be a sin there for just missing the yoga class.
In medias res, just in the middle of the action, for sure. I just think it's really bold, I think, when they do this in a cold open and it's not what the episode is going to be. But I think they knew that would be too Darmok. Even though they just go into a Genesis, I think if they did an episode based on that, it would immediately be compared to Darmok.
I literally am joking. I was just saying that to get a reaction, and it worked. Great. Let's go.
Well done. Oh, wait, it's my turn. You completely sent me off the rails.
I know.
Right, I've got two things here, and they're two sins that are linked together. You should never, ever send your one and only captain away on a diplomatic mission when you're in the Delta Quadrant and you need your captain. Just don't do it. Just don't. There are other people, other diplomats.
Okay, so question. Yeah. If they had followed regular protocol and Captain Janeway had stayed on board, who would be the two coming back to save the day? Chakotay and
Helix? I don't care about Chakotay. I love it when Tuvok and Neelix get paired up because you have Neelix's enthusiasm.
We didn't see Tuvok at all except for in a flashback, right?
Didn't see him at all. Yeah, he like gives some like sideways stares to the Doctor when he starts like quoting regulation because he's like low-key impressed. But Tuvok, the way he is forced to tolerate Neelix's enthusiasm and the way Neelix is like determined to be Tuvok's best friend ever is I love it. I love it so much. I think them being paired up would be really, really fun. But Janeway just shouldn't be on this mission. She shouldn't. And by the same token, don't send your only medical expert anywhere on an away mission ever, especially when somebody bumps into him and the mobile emitter gets taken off. I'm just... Don't risk it. Like, I know you have Kes that does some medical stuff. You have a few other nurses. You do not have another encyclopedia that can do brain surgery. It's the Doctor. That's it. I don't care how much you want to entertain his want to explore and his, like, boyish, like, excitement about being out there. He is enslaved to the ship. You destroy the mobile emitter immediately so that he can't leave the ship. You enslave that Doctor. Not what Star Trek is about, but I just think when he's your only Doctor.
Yeah, it's risky.
Yeesh, bad idea. Yeah. But it's how casual Chakotay is about it as well. He's just so casual. Just like, good point, well made. You can go down to the planet. And the Doctor's just like, oh yeah, I've read up on all of the protocols and away mission stuff. Chakotay doesn't know this? Like, shouldn't he have to pass an exam before he goes on an away mission? Like, why did he have to explain that he's read up on away missions? That should be a given.
For me, he had to do that. For the audience.
Correct.
Wow, you're really upset.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
This is one of 15 sins that you have for this episode, and this is bad.
These are the things that take away from it being a great episode for me, because there's so much casualness and offhandedness behind these insane decisions.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you're writing sins like that, I'm like, Captain Janeway puts an open cup on the console. That's a bad idea.
Absolutely fair. Like, casualness on a shuttlecraft is a terrible idea. This is how things end up crashing.
That's my next sentence.
Oh, is that your next one?
Yeah, like, literally, Janeway is just, like, sipping a cup of coffee, and then she's like, oh, I guess we gotta go light speed back to the boat. And then she puts her cup up on the console, and I'm like, just don't do that. Just don't do that.
Back to the boat. I love it. I have in all caps, damn it, Neelix, take your shirt off. So this is when he gets absolutely
sprayed upon,
just mucilaginic compound all over him, and I'm like, take off your damn shirt. Set the phaser to a fine beam and phaser that shirt away from his body. Why? Right under his nose, just sniffing it all up. Get that off of you. This thing dissolved a transporter pad. Why didn't it dissolve his clothing?
Right? That's a good question.
Neelix should be naked for the rest of the time that he's with Janeway. And they're just like, come on, let's go. Just come and drip everywhere and wear it. Ugh, so dumb.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah. I'm going to just send the lack of, not lack of, just touching things in this episode. There's just so much touching, and I'm going to cover a few of them here. We've got some gel pack touching. I know it's not a gel pack. Don't care.
No, you said it touching... right. It is. It's a gel pack.
What did I say? Oh, plasma. I was saying plasma earlier.
You were
look at me. I accidentally adapted.
I never should have told you.
Am I a virus?
Yes.
We have also face touching while sweating. You don't know what it is. Why are you? So Captain Janeway, she's like, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to look at all of my people. They're all fucked up. Look at them. And she's just like touching her face.
Yeah.
So much touching. Stop it.
Stop touching
doing
everything. Quit it. Just in general, stop touching everybody.
I know it's hot and you have to take your clothes off. But maybe just don't they have some kind of personal barrier they can put on that? I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's just.
Quarantine isn't for shit.
Quit it.
This is one that baffles me, and it really got to me this time. Doctor gets beamed up. Medical doctor goes behind the transporter console, nudges the transporter technician away, just like, I got this. I'm gonna purge the biofilter. And then the voiceover comes on. Little did I know, in the few seconds it took me to purge the biofilter, one of the viruses had already escaped. How is this shit not automatic? Why did you have to manually leave the fucking transporter pad, whoop-a-doop-a-doop, derp your ass around to a console, and then manually purge the buffer? Just purge it automatically. Why isn't it already... What's the point of buffering something if you don't then purge it? Is it going to keep it? Like, why wasn't all of that automated? This virus never should have made it onto the ship. It's so dumb. So dumb.
Yeah, it was really confusing. I was confused, and one of my sins would be not beaming directly to sickbay. Why risk him beaming onto the beam pad and then walking through everywhere?
Yeah.
I mean, there's just a lot
of...
So
strange.
There's so much... Or why beam away right by the person that's ill? Why not just take a hot minute?
He shouldn't be allowed back up. The condition should have been, until this is done, you can't come back, because that's the only way to be 100% sure that it doesn't get onto the ship.
The impression I got from this episode is that they have a lot of protocols in place and they ran the correct protocols, but those didn't work, and here's why. This is a very thought-through process.
Get him to leave the transporter room and say, little did I know, the biofilter didn't work and the creature got through. They go to the effort of making him do this extra step that works, but it doesn't work because of protocol. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's so dumb. So
it's bad.
Dumb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's your turn. I'm so mad.
You are really angry. This episode made you very upset.
This one pissed me off. Yeah, you can have action and be smart. This was like a switch your brain off action episode.
Yeah, okay. What's the next sin that I wrote? Let's see. Oh, I'm just going to read the sin to you. Sin, more medical kits are needed in more places, period.
Yes, completely. She has to crawl through 10 decks to get to that medical equipment.
Then she opens it and checks to see that it's there.
Oh my goodness.
It is. She doesn't even bring the whole thing with her. She just takes out the one thing she needs, tucks it in there, and then she's just like, yeah, goes back down the tube, and it's just too late. You know, it is too late. But my question is, why didn't we not have just medical stuff all over the place?
Everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. I guess it's Voyager, so they have to ration things. Maybe it takes a lot to refuel all of those packs. It's a big show. I don't know. It's
I really love dumb. That you're so angry this episode, because yeah, as the chat is pretty pointing mad. At, like, Ian is being like Danae last week, and then this episode is Ian's Darmok. I'm kind of loving
what's
this
weird
right
is
now.
That I still like this episode. There's just some dumb thing that it just, for in my brain, I'm thinking that just little effort went into thinking this out. And usually they have these conversations in the writer's room, and it just feels like they didn't this time and just liked G.I. Janeway.
Can I read this? Speaking of G.I. Janeway, can I read
please do.
Part? She climbs up into the warp core area. She opens the panel to a thingy. She derobes. We're going army. She packs her pack for war. Rambo time, beesh. Yeah. Janeway is pissed and wet.
Pissed and wet. There we go. That's what you like to see.
She presses open a lift and the bridge is goopy. These yep. are my notes for this episode.
That was the synopsis, actually, that they did the elevator pitch to get this episode
exactly.
made.
Janeway, angry, armed, wet, and goopy.
Yeah.
And they're like, sold. We're listening.
Let's go. Let's get Kate Mulgrew in straight away. This was a really dumb... Sorry, no. On that moment where Janeway is getting the medical pack to Neelix, he has a phaser. Instead, you know what works better than shouting, help me, Janeway? It's, or help me, Captain. Shoot the thing.
Oh, yeah.
Why didn't he shoot it? We know phasers work. He just
why
lets,
didn't he?
He just lets it happen, just accepts his fate. And I guess his head is spinning, but he's like making eye contact with it. Just wide beam, fire. Shoot the virus.
I'm still so confused about the effort that this virus is going through to move Neelix to the group area.
I just don't. Why do it?
There's so many that are already there.
Eat it.
And they're very strong, you know, to move Neelix.
Well, I mean, they just hover. So maybe they have zero mass or something stupid.
Kill it. Get it, Ian. You're so pissed.
So when the doctor gets this gets the inoculation and has to test it on the virus, get Kes out of there. Kes
that
should not be in
too.
The same
room. Why is
room?
Kes in that room? Why?
Get her out of there.
That's a terrible
no
idea.
Need.
Let's
no
give
need
him a
to
host.
Put her at risk.
You know, let's just take the beam down. She backs up a couple feet like that's probably plenty of room.
How do you know it's going to prefer the doctor over Kes? I just, it's
The
no
thing
need.
Just went from microscopic to not so microscopic in less than a second. You know, maybe not have Kes in there. And what happened to her anyway? Where did she go?
Oh, she just got taken out, apparently, by the virus at
we
some point.
We don't know. We don't know.
Grumble.
Grumble indeed. There's a moment whenever the doctor and Janeway leave that room to go there's into the Jeffrey's tubes once more. And doctor's going to go one way and she's going to go another way. And they climb into the Jeffrey's tube and the doctor just leaves the door open behind him.
Oh, no, really?
Just, this is a terrible idea.
Oh,
this
you
is
deserve
just asking to be hunted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You deserve that.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, using holograms and holodecks really badly, why, like, they send the virus into the holodeck and then have lots of holograms so that they're distracted by the holograms. Why are the holograms playing dead? They're holograms. Like,
so that the viruses would feel better about themselves.
Right? But then just keep populating it. Just keep feeding them. Like, if you want them to be convincing, like, if you're worried that the holograms are going to be like, oh, they're not reacting, we'll just move on. Then let them play dead and then populate more. Like, I don't know why we have this overhead view of all of these dead holograms.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. They don't give a shit. They just program the way to be programmed.
It really, everything that happens with the viruses at the end of this episode is really convenient. It's really convenient that all the big viruses were just in that area so that when the holodeck door opened, that they were attracted to the light. It was really convenient that they all went inside, and it was really convenient that they were all distracted by that, you know, so I don't know. I think it's,
My silly sin attached to that moment is that this doesn't happen in season 6 so that Fairhaven can be wiped out by a virus.
And oh, is that part of it?
Fairhaven is an ongoing holographic program that they have running that's basically an Irish village with a pub.
Oh dear.
And I don't like the Fairhaven episodes, and I think they should all be killed by this virus.
Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe the virus did kill him, you know?
I would love that.
I don't really have any more. I mean, the things that I've talked about are already kind of like, so you just keep going. You just keep going.
How does the Doctor not know the map of the ship? How does he forget he's a computer? I know he's meant to pretend to be a human. What benefit does it serve to forget where something is on the ship? I don't understand why Tom, senior staff, lieutenant, chief pilot, head helmsman, is being the fucking chef. There's 150 people on board. He's the next best option for chef. I know he's just helping out. He should be flying the ship or having some off time. He's a senior crew member. Why is he in the fucking kitchen? And we know he's no good at cooking. He's also, by the way, backup nurse. If anything, get him to do some more training to replace the Doctor that you're about to send on an away mission. Yeah, he's the backup nurse as well. Because he took like a first aid course or something.
We're talking about, like, I'm having flashbacks to being hired at a job and then finding out that they also need me to do like 7 other things. I'm wearing multiple hats because they are abandoned, right? Like they're
yeah. But if he's already backup nurse, being the pilot and nurse, that's enough. You're spared from kitchen duty, okay? Jesus Christ. The miners somehow develop Edison bulbs independently of planet Earth.
Oh, clever. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I believe that light bulbs could be invented in multiple ways, but these are clearly Edison bulbs. It's so great. Like, it's not even remotely alien looking. And also, they should be a kind of red light because you're in a mine and that's going to trash your night vision if you use a bright fluorescent light. They should be like a red light so that your night vision kind of stays intact in case of a power cut.
Man, you're angry. This
Last
episode
one.
Made you mad. I'm here for it. This is exciting.
I was always happy that comm badges had like a magnetic thing that attaches. Janeway just takes off her comm badge, picks it back up, and just plops it on. How does it stick to her uniform?
The future has technology.
I know. I just want to see what the future tech is that does it. Because it's
probably something like subdermal that's like sort of planted under the skin.
Right,
you've
got a magnet under the skin that always works.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, how is it attaching? Is it like, I don't know, it feels dumb. Anyway, that's all of my sin. I'm okay now, I feel good. But I think that's why I can only give it 2 stars.
I understand that now. Yeah, your anger is real and valid. Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, Ambassador, that's everything for this week. Did that fit the monster category? Are you happy that we did like a monster?
Absolutely. Like, this is a monster episode.
How do you feel about this as a monster episode?
Yeah, I think this fits the monster criteria really, really well because you have a mystery. Yeah. You have it attacking you. You have a battle. You have to figure something out. You got to outsmart it.
Mm-hmm.
And something interesting to look at. Again.
Yeah.
Think Hornet with 3 squid tentacle thingies.
Hornet, jellyfish, and
a protruding
proboscis.
Not proboscis. No.
That's the one that's stuck in our head.
It's the poopiscus.
Stylus. It has a stylus. Yeah, that's what it is.
It's a very angry stylus. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Are you ready for next week's episode?
Yeah.
We are staying in Voyager. There is one other really big monster episode that I know that I really, really enjoy. This is to finish out the monster medley. We're doing a 2-parter. This is going to be Equinox, and then the following week will be Equinox Part 2. So we're doing a 2-parter from Voyager.
Oh, good. A cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Great.
This is one of my favorite 2-parters in all of Voyager. I'm being completely selfish. However, this 100% fits the monster
criteria.
The monster criteria in more than one way. Bum, bum, bum. But yes, love Equinox. So next week will be Equinox Part 1. The following week will be Equinox Part 2. And then after that, we're going to do our Valentine's episode.
Oh, my
we're
God.
We're going to pick the lovely episode.
You
Last
can still
chance.
Send in your suggestions. CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com. CaptainsPod@CinemaSins.com. And you can send in. It does not have to be, you know, the telltale love between what's the guy's name from this episode and the girl's name from this episode?
Man, Tom and B'Elanna, I think, is what you mean. There we go.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be Tom Lana.
Yep. Bomb.
Doesn't have to be the bomb.
Yes, I love that.
It can be something unique. Love on screen, mm-hmm. Star Trek style. What does that mean to you? Send in your episode suggestion to CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com, and Ian is compiling what we're going to do. We're going to go through
some
love episodes.
Currently, a front runner for the first one that we're going to do. There is a bit of a wait. Do you want to do more than one?
Yeah, right. Like, well, how many should we do?
Oh, awesome. Two, three?
How many suggestions do we have so far?
I have three that have come out kind of in front, and one that's in front. So maybe we do those three.
Four? Is that four then?
No, sorry. Of those three, there's one that's ahead of those three. So there's three that have come to the front, and then one of those that's in front of those.
So of the 13 ones that have been sent in, you're only paying attention to four?
No, there's been like five or six. I think it's six that have been sent in, three that have had multiple, and one that is multiple.
Oh my God. I don't understand what is happening right now, but here's what I know. We're going to do a few, I think.
Yeah, I think we'll do a few. And I think I've got an idea for what to do next.
Yeah. Now, just a reminder, we've already done sex candle episodes. That one does not count, but it would be perfect for this category.
It would be the winner. I'm almost annoyed that we've already done Sub Rosa because it would be so perfect.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun.
Unconventional love.
Before we get to the end of the episode, though, we do usually do Moopsie versus Monster.
Oh,
so
yes!
Let's do that.
Who's going to win, Moopsie or the virus?
I think the virus wins.
I think the virus murders Moopsie. Absolutely destroys it because it's just sheer numbers,
isn't
it?
There's no bones. Yeah.
And there's no bones that we know of.
There's no bones. So it would definitely, like, it would secrete, it would overcome, it would take the Moopsie growth hormone, it would expand itself, and then there would be Moopsie no more. So
Moopsie no more. Sad. Yeah, sorry, Moopsie.
Moopsie doesn't have anything to do, but
you unanimously
Moopsie
lose this
has
one.
What the virus needs, so it's kind of sad. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Imagine Moopsie being that tiny. Anyway.
So sad.
Well, thank you for coming with us on that journey this week. We hope it didn't give you any kind of COVID PTSD. And until next week and Equinox, I'm Captain Ian, and I've got a and I've got to fix an orifice on my glandular tissue.
Oh my God. And so you have a redundant stomach from me.
Yes, I'm so glad you pulled that out.
What the fuck does that even mean?
Two stomachs. Ah, live long.
Do Klingons have two stomachs?
They have two of basically every organ. Yeah.
Oh, we've had this conversation before.
They have two of everything. And I can't remember if it's canon that they have two phalluses, but they have two of most things. Yeah.
What a thought to end the episode on. Goodbye.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through CaptainsPod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
So, pick up any good dogs lately? Come on, Ambassador. What was the video that you sent me this morning?
Oh, man. Maybe you should describe the video that I sent you this morning. It has, like, what a freaking morning I have had. I have had no time to even stop.
So the video that I got this morning was of Danae, I'm assuming, in the car doing the school run. And then the camera just pans to the left a little bit. And I just see this huge chocolate Labrador that does not belong to Danae. Sitting in the trunk of the car, just like, hey guys, hello, I'm on the video. This isn't the first time you've rescued a dog. You're more likely to be that person because a lot of people will just drive past that dog and see the time investment and the potential world changer that is for them and just drive on by. Yeah. So I guess you're more likely to do that because you've done it before and it's part of your personality. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've learned some tricks over the years, you know, but it's a lot. Like I think I've rescued a husky, I've rescued a shih tzu, I've rescued a Saint Bernard. That one became my own personal dog. There's obviously Max is my newest, but there's so many that I've had to pass because they either won't come to me and I can't chase them down, and I'm like, okay, I have to trust that you know where you're going, buddy. There's been some driving to the countryside, you see a dog running down, those are country dogs. They are usually out.
Yeah, they're open in the field.
But this is a dog that was hobbling along. I could tell that he has like hip dysplasia kind of going on.
Oh, buddy.
And I was just like, dude, what are you doing out? And you could just see that he was like just on a little walk that just kept going.
Just wandering around.
When I opened my car door and I stopped the car, I got out and I looked at him and was like, hey, buddy. And he just turned around. He was like, oh, hi. And he just comes right over. Nuzzles up to me, gives me a big smile, and I opened you'll love this. My car is the car of a very chaotic, very busy mother. So it's just not, I don't empty my car every time I get out of it.
Well, your daughter owns the back half. So that is an extension of her bedroom. It's like toys and coats and clothes, and that's her space.
I open up Iris's side of the car door, and this dog just looks at it and is like, lady, I ain't getting in that.
Nope.
So I walk him to the other side of the car and he follows me, such a sweet boy. And then I open it up and this dog looks in and just sees absolute chaos. There's toys. I gave Iris
Legos.
A thing of Kleenexes to wipe her nose. There's just this flood of Kleenexes that haven't been cleaned up since yesterday. I mean, like, it's crazy. And he just looks at me. He's like, I'm not doing that either. So then I go open the hatch. Now every door in my car is open pretty much. Mm-hmm. And I open the hatch.
Take
and,
your pick.
And he looks at me. He's like, hun, my back hurts.
My legs. I'm not climbing up there.
Because I carry 60-pound bags of dog food when I buy dog food, I'm like, I'm confident. Even though I haven't worked out in quite some time, I can do this. So I heft this big beefy boy into the back of the car. And he just plops down and goes, ugh. Thanks, lady.
Thanks, mom. New mom.
And I stopped for my favorite breakfast sandwich. And why didn't I get my favorite breakfast sandwich? I'll tell you why. Because I had to use said breakfast sandwich to lure a dog out of my car.
But why couldn't you eat the sandwich after you'd lured the dog?
I used the sandwich to lure the dog. He ate the sandwich.
Yeah, but dogs don't need to eat it. They'll follow you as long as you have food.
Not this one.
So he had to eat the sandwich.
You mean tease the dog?
Yeah, tease the dog.
That's horrible.
You tease it into the house with the yummy thing and then give it regular dog food.
Let me wave this delicious food in front of your face and then not give it to you.
That's exactly how bait works. That's how fishing works. That's how baiting something works.
No. Fish technically put that in their mouth.
They do. That's fair.
Then there's a hook.
They do.
Then they die.
Yeah. Then they die. I mean, you're not going to kill the dog, so I think the exchange is that it doesn't get to eat your breakfast. I called you and I was just like, Danae, fill me in. And my instinct would be like, maybe the worst thing you can do is take them 30 miles away from where they live, because now you're making it impossible, essentially, for the other family to find the dog. But it's better than him being out in the cold and getting hit by a car.
It was, yeah, it was absolutely. Initially I'm just taking him around in the neighborhood, but then once I found someone who put him on the Facebook group, I felt confident to drive to where I live.
The internet's going to do a better job than you driving around, as proven by this story.
But by the time that the owner called me, the story had evolved into that their dog had somehow wandered 35 miles away. In 2 hours.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
So I was like, No.
I stole him.
I dog napped. Yeah. I stole your dog from the neighborhood because I wanted him to be safe. And I'm so sorry. And I'm willing
to
drive him back to you. Yeah. I'm in the UK. We got on a plane. I now know the dog's name is Max.
He looks like a Max.
Doesn't
I was absolutely
he?
Gonna guess. Yeah, I should have guessed that he's called Max.
Right? I was calling him
Max
Hank.
The chocolate lab. Yeah, Max
because
or
he's
Hank.
Very hanky.
I would have bought that.
Because he's a hunky
he's
dog.
He's a Hank. Yeah, Hank the Tank.
And I was right. He's 10 years old.
Oh, you guessed 13. Nice.
I guess he was
very,
somewhere between
close.
10 and 13. And once I was like, no, he doesn't have enough white for 13. So, but I was like, he is at least a decade old. And I'm right.
Yeah, he's an older boy.
And his owners are so, so happy with me. And it feels so good because whenever you pick up a dog and you're attempting to assist in a rescue situation,
yeah,
you don't know if this is going to be your responsibility for here on out. And it's a really scary situation. I know because I've done it many times now in my life that it doesn't always go as planned. And it's not always the best case scenario.
Sometimes you end up with a Saint Bernard.
Sometimes you do. I'm happy to say that like both of his owners are just thrilled. And I've been sending them pictures of Max.
Aww. So
Max is a big dog compared to my dogs, at least twice the size, if not more. You know, he's right. probably 80,
he's a big boy.
80 to 100 pound dog. He's mm-hmm. a chunky lab. And he's laying in their dog bed. So he engulfs it.
Just, can you see the dog bed?
Technically, yes. he's laying in the dog bed in front of the fireplace and the fire is on, and that's the picture I sent to them.
Oh my goodness. What an awesome turnout.
I know.
It's the best case scenario. You see this dog wandering around on the streets, it comes to you, you rescue it, and almost immediately make contact with the owners. Like, it's such a great story.
The owners are gonna come get him. After they get off work, and I told
That's
both,
awesome.
They both called me, that the husband and the wife have both called me, and I was like, he's safe, he's happy,
yeah,
we're fine here. But at one point, while all this is going on, I have Max at the back, he's out in the backyard, and he's come mm-hmm. to the back door, and he's just staring at me like, this is not where I do not want to be in the cold any longer.
Yeah,
please,
right?
Let me in. I have my neighbor's cat meowing incessantly at the back door of the garage, where mm-hmm. I have like a chair that needs to be reupholstered, and it's a really plush chair, and I've put the cat bed, which is like a little cave, on that chair, and then I've covered the cat bed in really warm blankets, so if he decides to sleep in my garage, he's super warm and comfy.
Mm-hmm.
He
yep.
was sleeping in there when we went out this morning, and when I came back, he was still in there.
Just a happy cat.
He woke up and he's ready to come inside now. And so he is just yelling at me from the door. Opposite of that door is the door to my bedroom, which has my two dogs that are barking at me going, this isn't fair. We live here.
Yes. We keep being annexed. Quit it. I know there's a dog out there.
And it turns out that Max got out at 6:30 this morning, and I found him at 8:30, and he had been lost. This is the first
time
in his entire life he's ever been out of the house.
Oh no!
He has a little buddy dog that let's see if I can remember the dog's name.
Hank.
Blondie or something.
Debbie Harry.
It's Max and his girl buddy, and they are always playing together out in the back or whatever. And mm-hmm. she started barking at 6:30 this morning. They didn't go check.
Interesting.
So that's when Max got out, and they've been searching for him, but they had to go to work. And so I just remember when my dogs have gotten out in the past, how horrible it feels to not know where they are and hope for the best.
Wait, did you prove that the owners own Max and they don't just want a free dog?
No, but let me tell you what happened.
So I kind of want to like be on the phone while these people pick up the dog. In case this is a long con or a short con.
I mean, what a con it is.
But you just have to go onto Facebook and say, yeah, that's my dog. I'm so happy. Thank you so much.
I mean, it's always difficult, right? Like, I have had to validate dogs before.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, whenever I rescued the husky, he was so beautiful. And I'm not saying that Max isn't beautiful, okay? But
the husky was a desirable dog.
The husky is like a designer breed kind of a thing, right? He was not even a black and white husky. He was a red husky. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
So I went through several rounds of, can you please send me a picture of your dog? Can you prove that this is your dog?
That's an easy thing to do with these guys. Yeah. Send me a picture with Max.
So when it comes time for pickup, I could do that. This is an old dog that has big tufts of hair all over the back half of his body where he's shedding. He's got a massive goiter. I think that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like where the skin sort of bulbs out. He has clearly like hip dysplasia or something. He hobbles around.
So if not for the dog, I would worry for your security. So even what if this isn't about the dog, mm-hmm. but it's an opportunity mm-hmm. to get into your home?
Oh, yeah, right. And then like the weird thing, like, come on in, see where your dog has been all day. The other thing is I found this dog in a particular neighborhood, and then I stopped somebody in the neighborhood multiple somebodies and said, hey, do you know who this dog is? I'm cutting out a lot of the details, essentially, that just, do you know this dog? Do you know where he's come from? And they're all like, no. And the final person said, let me put him up on our neighborhood Facebook page. So the dog and my information go on that page. From there, someone in the neighborhood was also looking at another Facebook page for rescues, for help me find my dog in the neighborhood, because the neighborhood is adjacent to this big park. So the park one was like, we're looking for Max. And someone said it, like, they connected the two. They shared the picture. I had two phone calls before talking to the owners. I had two phone calls from two other people that were, they sounded like they were in tears. Like, you have Rob and Suzanne's dog. Oh, they're going to be so relieved. Okay. Please call them right now, because she has been worried all morning. Like, they're calling me.
Yeah. I'm just saying, if I was going to set this up, that's exactly what I would do.
For what? Why do you want
to
have a dog?
Just to get into your house? No, I don't want the dog. I want to get into your house because it's a nice neighborhood.
What a long con. I love that you're thinking this way.
I think longer cons happen. People set up call centers to con people out of their credit card details. This is a pretty easy one because you're preying on people's emotions.
Okay. So they release a dog into the wild.
No. This is what I'm saying. They're not. They're going to these dog websites saying,
that's my dog.
Yeah, just to get access to someone's house. Forget about the dog. They don't want the dog.
Oh, okay. They want to come into my house and they want to take my things and potentially kill me.
Yes.
And then take the dog.
Don't care about the dog. They just want your things.
Leave the dog behind.
This is just easy access. Yeah. They'll just tie you up. This is easy access to someone's house.
Okay. I love how paranoid you are. This is great.
I'm assuming the worst.
Absolutely.
Because if it all goes well, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But if like Ben Affleck says, if there's a 1% chance, you have to take it as an absolute certainty.
Well, the worst could happen today. And if it does happen, I've had a beautiful, wonderful life. Mm-hmm. And I love you all. Please give my things to my parents. They'll know what to do.
Wait, what do I get?
This show, I guess. Like, I guess you get to pick whoever comes on the show next, you know?
Hey, open audition, start now.
I do not own a taser.
Don't tell them that.
I don't have a taser. I've seen it.
Danae has a taser in every room, pepper spray in every room. If you try and invade her house, she is always 1 meter away from pepper spray and a taser.
No.
Damn it,
I don't own a taser because the taser could easily hurt me because Iris would just grab it and be like, what's this?
Look at this.
If there's no show next week, it's because I've died due to home invasion.
Oh, no, there'll still be a show next week.
Okay. Phew. Good to know. Things will move on like normal. I will be forgotten quickly.
We'll just move on.
The person who made the neighborhood post for Max for me.
Yeah.
Just texted to see how it's going.
And
she says,
people care. I love it.
Well done, dog friend. And I said, it was your post that made it happen. Imagine someone being like, hi, I'm so sorry to bother you. Can you come look in my car at this dog? Like, there's just the creep factor.
Get in my trunk. I didn't say it like that, but you know. I need you to just quickly take a peek in my trunk. Nope. We're going to miss you very much, Danae. You have died doing a good deed. Mm-hmm. You didn't do your due diligence.
It's good. Yep.
The people came into your house. They killed you and hid the body, Danae. I tried to warn you about this, but you didn't listen to me.
Okay, the last thing going through my mind while I'm being murdered is just like, Ian was right. So just
me your final thought. You could have survived this. Danae is dead. Question for Danae from Nick. Did watching this remind you of the Lower Decks episode with Voyager and in turn make you feel that I remember that feeling? Because I totally forgot this. Voyager is in season 4. They do this like, it's a museum. And Boimler like damages lots of different parts of the ship. And they do like a tour of
the ship.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah. I'm guessing you did too.
I'm glad that you asked this question because there there were parts of this episode where I was having a bit of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Remembering the different characters as they were coming up. And it was interesting because they were sort of scattered. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of the familiar faces in the flashback, obviously. But when they first come upon the familiar faces, she discovers like all of them piled up in that room and they're just like kind of like.
Yeah.
Was it Harry, maybe?
I think, yeah, Harry was the one that was like heavy breathing. Yeah.
I remember that guy. So there was a lot of nostalgia hits mm-hmm. for me. But I said this at the top of the episode, which you guys were going to hear when the episode comes out. But like Janeway, even in this, who becomes this, you know, G.I. Jane person, there's a lot of her personality that I have forgotten. I did not remember that she liked classical jazz or whatever's playing at the end of the episode. And
who knows?
I didn't remember that part. Doesn't
come up a lot. I think she likes classical music. I think that's the overarching thing.
She's just, you know, painting and sipping tea. These are things I didn't remember about the captain.
Oh, Cameron brings up a clarifying point, which I appreciate. Ambassadors are civilians and captains are military. One doesn't outrank the other. But your point is still valid. Military officers can't appoint civilian officials. So this works for us and also Janeway. Like Janeway appointing Neelix as an ambassador. Technically, she doesn't have the authority to do that, but I think it's more playful. But I can't demote you and you can't outrank me because you're a civilian.
You're welcome.
Phil asks, will you guys do the animated series? Yes, in short. I don't know when. We'll do it eventually because why not? Like, animation is fun and it's a weird, weird series. Like, I kind of love that they decided to just be off the wall. Because, like, hey, we can draw whatever we want. So we're not limited by budgets. So let's have a cat on the bridge and just make up some crazy shit. Like, it's a bit of a wild one. I love it. Man, this Discovery Season 5 thing predictably set off, not a ruckus, but a debate. I'm genuinely not sure. I don't know if it's a good idea or not. Like, it'll be great. Like, well, we would do it, but it's a weird one. And I know Discovery isn't the most popular of the seasons of the series of Star Trek. It might come into its own, like, as people rewatch it over the years, but I think I'd rather do Prodigy. I think I'd rather do like 10 episodes of Prodigy where we do two a week because they're like 20 minutes each. Still on the fence about that one. We also decided while you were away that we're going to I think it's Comic Con in Las Vegas to do some Star Trek things. Star Trek Las Vegas.
When is it?
First week of August, I think. We're going to go to Vegas and we're going to have a Captain Squad meetup. We've decided.
Wait, when?
First week of August this year.
First week of August.
It is decided.
Do you guys know what I'm doing right now?
Looking up the calendar and tickets.
I'm taking that time off before you get to it.
No, hang on.
Hey,
wait, I'm going to just message
like
Jeremy.
I'll be taking off
hey,
the first
Jeremy.
Weekend of August.
We'll be working. Beep, 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 beep. It's just a work away. We will be doing work for that period of time.
Let's start a GoFundMe to buy tickets for everybody, like a crowdsourcing thing.
But hang on a minute. The only people with an incentive to do that are the people that are going. So it would only, you'd end up paying for your own ticket.
Captain Spot, enter studio. Click on button. Go, go, go. Yes, I'm late again. Yes, yes. But the live show will blame you. So
at Renewal by Andersen, we love sharing friendly words of wisdom about windows and doors. And we're thrilled when our customers do the same.
We're just so happy with the quality of the windows, the warranty of the windows, the fact that I get a call every year asking, is there anything else we can do for you? Do you need any help with anything? That to me is a good quality company.
Visit us online at iHeartMyWindows.com to schedule an in-home appointment when it's time to talk windows. We'll bring the wisdom. Renewal by Andersen.